Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
I'm Alex Smith, picking up with author and alternative energy guru Dan Chiras. We're talking about the solar revolution right now.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, what the cost of power from the utilities today is not representative of what it's going to be in 5 years. And nationwide, the last 35 years, you look at electrical costs in the United States, the last 35 years, it's increased 4.4% per year. So if you're paying 10 cents a kilowatt hour this year, you're going to pay 4 or 5% higher next year, and the next year, and the next year. In a lot of areas, it's twice that. You look at in St. Louis, for example, the local utility, Ameren, has increased its rate at least 10% a year for the last 6 years. If they do it again next year, that means it will have doubled in 7 years. And that's what most customers say. Yeah, I mean, I can produce solar for 7.5 cents and I'm paying 10 cents for my utility, and I know where that's going. But the solar is a fixed cost. And that's why it's very popular with businesses, school districts, because they say, hey, that cost of power is increasing every year, and it's hurting businesses and people on fixed incomes. And they go, well, I can pay for it now, and I'm assured that basically that same rate for 30 years, because that's what you're doing. You're prepaying your electric bill.
Plus, socially, we're losing so much power in the transmission system, and our transmission system is really old, whereas with solar power, there it is right where you need to use it. It's there with no transmission costs, and I think as a society, we're going to have to start counting those things.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, there is one thing that we need to correct is that if you put a solar system on your house and it's grid-tied, you know, in other words, you have no batteries involved in that system, when the grid goes down, whether that's a lightning storm or a tornado or a hurricane, whatever, so do you. So that's one of the things people need to understand is that if you're just putting in grid tied with no batteries, the systems will shut off if the grid shuts down. So we don't have that quite as much energy independence as people think. You can put in a battery system as a backup. The grid can go down and you'll switch over seamlessly to battery operation. You won't even know it happened. I mean, you might go to the neighbors next door and find out they're out of electricity because, you know, a lightning bolt struck a local transformer or something like that, or a tree came down across the line, and you're just over there doing your thing. Your computer's working, your TV's working, your lights are working, your neighbors are all in the dark. So that's the thing that people need to be careful about is that we do have that one problem with grid-tied systems is that because they have the potential to feed power onto the grid, as a safety measure, when the grid goes down, they have to shut down.
So do the utilities make it so you have to choose one way or another? Can I have my batteries and still sell some electricity to the utility? I can do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're speaking on solar power right now. We've got a 120-watt panel up on the roof of mobile studio, and we do have batteries up in the front. So it's solar-powered right now.
Yeah, you can go grid-tied with battery backup. That's what it's called. And so your batteries are there just in case something happens to the grid. It's just your backup system. But most of the time, if you're producing surplus, it's feeding back onto the grid. Your meter's running back. And then if you need it at night, it's yours for free. You need it the next day, it's yours for free. You need it 2 days later, it's yours for free.
Well, to me, the other whole secret to this, Dan Chiras, is that we've got to really cut back on the amount of electricity we're using. We've got to have the right appliances that use really low energy. We've got to have the right lighting, all of that. Tell us a little bit about how that fits in with the solar vision.
Well, you know, to me, it's just crucial, absolutely crucial. It still is cheaper to save energy than to generate it. Even though the price of solar has come down so much, it's still cheaper to put in an energy-efficient light bulb. Or if you're upgrading, if you're buying a new refrigerator, if you're buying a new television set or washing machine, it's still a better investment to go out and buy the most efficient ones on the market. And that will lower your overall demand, which means you need a smaller system, which means you save money. So I'm a real strong advocate of efficiency. In fact, if I were appointed the energy czar for the United States, as much as I love solar and wind, I'd be putting an awful lot of money into efficiency. It's the fastest, the least expensive, and truly the most sustainable way of, in a sense, producing power. Because if you save, you know, if you're saving 100 kilowatt hours a year or a month or whatever, that's, you know, essentially you've freed up 100 kilowatt hours that someone else can use. So it really is a much better solution from the standpoint of sustainability. It's efficiency first. That's what I teach all my students who come to the Evergreen Institute to learn how to install solar systems and sell solar systems. Is the most important thing to do for your customers is help them cut back on demand. Cut that down. It means a smaller system. That saves resources. That saves energy, because it does take energy to make all these systems. So efficiency first, efficiency first, efficiency first.
Got it. You know, a couple of my friends who are off-grid have said to me, Alex, if you're thinking about doing this, you should start with water heating. That's, you know, a good place to go, because you can get a lot of bang for your buck with solar water heating. Are you involved in advising on that too?
I do. In fact, it's really kind of one of the hidden secrets in the solar world, is that solar hot water systems, they're typically called solar thermal systems, designed to capture heat from the sun and, you know, make heat to either heat a home or, more commonly, just to heat water, domestic hot water systems. It's one of the best bargains out there. They have a real high rate of return, especially if you're heating now with electricity or propane. Those are the two most expensive ways to heat water. So if you're currently heating with propane or electricity, it's actually much cheaper to go to solar thermal, solar hot water systems. It really is one of the best buys. They're relatively inexpensive systems. The return on your investment is, you know, typically around 10%. So you're, you know, it's a really decent investment. And again, from an environmental standpoint, it's a great investment. So yeah, absolutely. Solar thermal, solar hot water systems first. But boy, it just doesn't get much traction. Solar electricity is so much sexier. People are all turned on to that one. They don't hear enough about solar thermal systems and understand that they are such a tremendously good buy.
Well, you go down to Mexico and you look at some of the public housing that's been built. All of them have those big black sort of concrete towers on the top, because that's their hot water source right there. There's no sense paying for it when you've got it right from the sun. But I've talked to people even in Canada who are getting all of their hot water from the sun. They need to supplement it in the winter months because there just isn't enough sun at that point, but they still have solar thermal systems that can run during the cold weather. They don't freeze up. There's ways of doing it, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. It's not uncommon to get 70 to 80% of your heat from the sun on a solar thermal system. In fact, most people just shut off their backup heat, hot water system, in the summer months, you know, May, June, July, August, September, October, you know, 5-6 months a year. When I lived in Denver, that's what I did. I had a solar hot water system for my domestic water, and I just shut the backup. There was a gas heater that was a backup system. Just shut that off for 5-6 months a year, and I just lived entirely off solar hot water. But so, yeah, it's really doable. It's very, very doable. And the systems are really quite sophisticated. What you talked about in Mexico, those are called solar batch heating systems. And there are some really nice, sophisticated systems. In Mexico, you just find a big tank on the roof, a black tank. Very, very simple systems. And that's ideal in the southern United States, southern Texas, Florida, you know, all of Florida. You should see systems like that all over, these batch heating systems. But there are much prettier ones, you know, with a flat plate collector that will hold 60 or 80 gallons of hot water. And you could virtually get all your hot water in a climate like that from those systems. Now, we wouldn't want a batch heater up north where we have freezing weather. But in those systems, we have what's called a drain back system. It circulates water through the collector on the roof. And then as soon as the sun goes down, the system shuts down, all that water drains back into a storage tank. So there's no chance of it freezing. And that's what we have at our place in Missouri now, is a drain back system, and works beautifully. There are a lot of other types too that will protect from freezing. So you don't need it. Solar is used in a lot more places than in, say, the desert Southwest. The solar thermal systems are good virtually anywhere in the United States.
Right, and in Canada or Canada. Australia, of course. Australia is just a hotbed of solar energy. And Europe, Germany. Look, Germany is getting, I think it's about 25% of their power now from solar, and they're not a southern country, really.
No, Germany is a climate about like Missouri. It's not really terribly sunny. It's kind of in the middle. It's 4.7 peak sun hours a day. So it's not really a solar capital, but definitely Germany's the leader. I think it's 20% is what I hear. But there's some states now in the U.S., Iowa, North Dakota, Colorado, all get 20% of their electricity from the sun, which is phenomenal. I mean, you think about that. That is huge. And that's happened just in the last 10 years.
And Arizona's getting about 2%. Yeah. I just spoke to someone there who said it's being run on coal power in what should be the solar capital of the United States. It's bizarre.
I actually misspoke. It's those states that I mentioned, it's 20% of their energy from wind and sun, not just sun.
Right.
Large wind systems, yeah.
Okay. Now, you're going to be talking about whether the energy revolution has begun. Can you give us a clue? Has it?
Oh, it's here. This is one of the most exciting things that's happened. You know, some of us have been in this since the 70s, and we've been, you know, the excuse has always been, yeah, their systems are expensive, but, you know, the traditional ways of creating electricity, coal and nuclear, they don't take into account the external cost. You know, what you pay for your electricity doesn't take into account all that carbon dioxide that's emitted from a coal-fired power plant, or the nuclear waste that's blowing around on the west part of western regions of Colorado where they mine for nuclear fuels. It doesn't account for those economic externalities. Now we can say that with a dramatic decrease in the price of solar electricity, we're very cost competitive, and we're seeing a dramatic increase in the world. The United States now gets 10% of its energy from renewables. That's hydro, solar, and wind. And in fact, wind and solar are the two fastest growing sources of energy in the world. I mean, it's just phenomenal. China's a leader in solar and wind, especially wind energy. So the revolution has begun. We're on track for enormous increases in the amount of energy we get from renewable. It would not surprise me that within 50 years, we were getting 50, maybe 80% of our energy from renewables. It's growing that fast. So if the growth sustains itself, if we don't have political changes that take us back, you know, to the dark ages, if we can keep this momentum moving, you know, we're staged for some dramatic growth. And it's already occurring. And if it looks like it will continue to occur.
Well, we desperately need it. We've got climate change just biting and coming up behind us in a terrible way, all sorts of extreme weather events. So we've got to make that change for a lot of reasons, for economic reasons, and I think for social reasons. To have a more distributed power system would be kind of nice, as opposed to monopoly utilities that we've had for the past 100 and some odd years. Well, Dan Shiras, we have the answers, and you have many of the answers built up over a lifetime of working away at this. I would like you to tell our listeners about, say, two books that you've piled all this good info into.
Probably the number one book would be The Homeowner's Guide to Renewable Energy. It's out in a brand new edition, so it's been thoroughly updated. If you're looking at either building a brand new house or even an office building, you know, a lot of these, the book is written for homeowners, but it really applies to business as well. But if you're looking at building a new home or a business, if you're looking at retrofitting your home for energy, it covers everything. It's a good introductory level. It tells you a lot about efficiency, the stuff we talked about earlier, the importance of that, and what you can do to make your building, either retrofit it or when you build a new building, make it just as absolutely efficient as possible. I mean, we can build a house right now that from the start uses 75% less energy. I mean, how cool is that? To just by building right, investing a little bit more up front, 75% less energy. Essentially, it's free energy for life, and then power the remainder with solar and wind. And so the rest of the book talks about the different types of systems. There's a chapter on solar electricity, you know, basics of solar electricity, a chapter on solar thermal systems, a chapter on how we heat our homes passively, you know, without furnaces, without, you know, how we can back off on our use of natural gas for furnaces. So how can we heat our homes naturally using natural forces, sunlight, and how do we cool our homes passively as well? And that's an often overlooked subject as well, as we're always thinking about heating homes, but for a lot of us, our cooling bills are higher than our heating bills. So how do you cool that home naturally without the environmental impacts of air conditioning, for example. So there's a chapter on geothermal. It's a really, really good introduction to that subject and good solid information. It's called The Homeowner's Guide to Renewable Energy. And I know I've got a lot of other books. If you're one of my most popular books is called Power from the Sun. And that's a book just on solar electricity, which is probably the hottest renewable energy source right now for homeowners and businesses. And that's a really, really good introduction. It's written for the layperson, so you don't need a PhD in physics or, you know, need a degree in electrical engineering to understand that book. That's what I've done my whole career. I am a scientist, and I've spent my whole career taking complex technical information and translating it accurately into terms that people can understand. That's what that book's all about. That's another important reading if you're thinking about going solar electricity.
So where do people find the Evergreen Institute, and where do they find you? Do you have a blog as well?
Well, I do. The Evergreen Institute, I'll start there, is evergreeninstitute.org. And there's a good amount of information just on the website. And on the right column, there's just good resources on solar. So it's evergreeninstitute.org. And I do have a blog. I have two blogs. I'm doing one right now on building a net zero energy home through Mother Earth News. So you can find it at the Mother Earth News blog site. Or you can just type in Dan Chiris net zero energy home into whatever search engine you're using. This is Dan Chiris net zero energy home, and that'll take you right to it. And I have another one too. Now that I'm up there in years, I've started to reflect on life, and I actually wrote a book called Things I Learned Too Late in Life. And so I've got a blog through Mother Earth News called Dan Chiris on loving life. And it's a kind of a fun little blog with lessons about sustaining ourselves. You know, I've been focused all along about how we sustain, you know, build sustainable homes and sustainable energy and all gardening and all that stuff. And it, just as I get older and more reflective, I've started this whole kind of new venture. And so it's Dan Chiris on loving life.
I'm going to read that blog because I'm kind of at the same state myself. You know, I was a doomer for a little bit too long, and now I'm thinking, we just have this one life, but I've got grandchildren too. I want it to be good for them, but I want everybody to have a livable life and enjoy it. And there is enjoyment there to be had.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we're so much more effective if we come at this thing with love. And I know that may sound corny to some people, but you think about it. I mean, I was kind of an angry young man for a long time because I saw what was happening to our planet, and it just made me angry, furious with what we were doing. But over the years, I've learned that, you know, a loving heart is the truest wisdom. And if we approach these things with love and compassion, we become a lot less fanatical. We become a lot more easy to listen to and to understand. If people get that you're not browbeating them, but rather you're inviting them to this world that really has many of the same goals they're after. I mean, let's face it, I don't care what side of the political spectrum on, we're all fathers and mothers and grandparents, and we all want a better world for our children. Even though we fundamentally differ on political ideologies, there are a lot of things that we want together, and a clean environment is part of that. And I don't know how to say this, except like environmental care is the ultimate form of self-care. You know, if we all get that, if we all understand that environmental protection is really a precondition for economic success for a nation. I mean, if you undermine your resource base, you're undermining your future economics. Solar energy is a fantastic economic resource. So if we can get people on the same page, and not through angst, though, and not through anger and angst and name-calling, but rather just come from a place of understanding, of compassion, and of love, we've got a better chance of making this all happen. You know, I always tell my audiences that the environment is the source of all our resources. You know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, you know, the plastic we use in our world actually comes from oil, which is ancient marine organisms, algae. Everything comes from our environment. And if we could get everybody to understand that fundamental truth that the environment is the source of all our resources, and hence the source of our well-being and the source of our economic well-being, what a world this would be. Imagine if every political leader just got that when they're in third grade, you know, before they become political leaders. And I use that word in quotation marks. But if every politician, every governor, every congresswoman, congressman, senator, mayor, business executive got that idea that, hey, this isn't, you know, about protecting pretty places for bird watchers and backpackers, this thing called environmental protection. It's not this kooky, oh, those crazy environmental tree huggers. Hey, that's true, and I'm not denigrating that at all. It's really important. You know, we have places to enjoy, but it's really our economic prosperity. Our well-being is all tied up in protecting the environment, the earth, and its resources.
Dan Chiris, it's been a pleasure meeting you on Radio EcoShock.
It's been a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Radio EcoShock.
We just have time to squeeze in a few minutes with a very experienced solar designer and installer from Washington State, Brad Burkhartsmeyer.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're at the Mother Earth News Fair with Brad Burkhartsmeyer. We're going to talk about solar. I think you should be interested in solar. We've got climate change. We've got energy shortages. And it's just a clean way to get your electricity. I guess you know all that, but maybe we'll talk about some things you don't know. That's the hope. Brad, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good morning. It's great to be here with you.
So you are what? You're an installer and designer of solar systems in Washington State, is that right?
That's correct. We have an installation company here where we design and install solar systems for people on their homes and businesses.
Washington State, it's not known as the Sunshine State. I've talked to people in Arizona who don't have solar, and yet there's people in Washington State who are getting it. How's it working out?
Well, it seems to be working fine. We do not get as much sun as they do in Arizona, but we get at least 3/4 of what they get, and so we can do quite well with solar here. Washington State actually has more sun than Germany, which has more solar installed than any country in the world, and so we do better than them.
What kind of people are buying solar panels? Do you have to be a wealthy person to do this, or who's buying them?
Well, most people need some money up front to purchase solar panels here in Washington State. Our incentive will get they'll get their money back over time, but they have to pay for it up front. So most people need somewhere in the range, the low side, they may need $6,000 or $7,000. But most of our customers spend between $20,000 and $30,000 U.S.
That's a lot of money, but they're getting their own power plant. Is that what it boils down to?
They get their own power plant. They're essentially buying their electricity production, 25 years of it, ahead of time. They're paying for it up front. And then after that, there's no more inputs. The fuel is free, falling out of the sky from the sun. And so for 25 years, they'll get electricity.
It's like buying any kind of investment. You might buy a treasury bond, a 30-year treasury bond, and get a certain amount of interest every year. And that's what, this case, you're buying your electricity ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly like that. And our little calculations on returns, it's anywhere between 5% to 12% return on your money.
That's
based
on
our incentive program. It's an awesome deal. So a lot of people are doing it.
And do these panels really last that long?
Well, there's some that they were first invented in 1954 back in at Bell Labs in New Jersey. And some of those that were invented in the 1950s are still operating today. So we know they last a long time. They come with a 25-year warranty, but we don't know how long they'll last. My guess is most of them will last longer than that.
Right. Is this the silicon-based type of panel we're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking mainly about crystalline, both mono and polycrystalline silicon modules, which
right,
is like 90% of the world market.
Okay, because there are cheaper sort of plasticky-looking ones that you can get at, you know, the tire store or the discount store. And I've had some experience talking with people who bought those. They don't last very well. They put out less and less as far as wattage goes.
Yeah, there's some technologies called amorphous silicon, which is a technology that works well. It's less expensive to make, but they don't last as long and they don't have as much power output. They're not as efficient as converting the sunlight into electricity as crystalline silicon.
Well, talking about output, I had a 50-watt solar panel down in Baja, California, in Mexico, at the tropics. I got my full 50 watts. You know, that's 12 volts, 4 amps. I bring it up to the Canadian border, 49th parallel. I'm only getting 2 amps, and so I'm only really getting 24 or 25 watts out of it. Is that just the way it is, or could I have done something better?
It's probably not anything you're doing. It's just the amount of sun you get. They output based on the brightness of the sunlight that hits them. So the brighter and more direct the sunlight, the more output they're going to get. When they come out of the factory, that 50-watt panel has been tested at certain conditions to get that 50-watt label. And one of those conditions is they have 1,000 watts worth of light shining on it to test it. And so that would be similar to the kind of light that you would get in Baja California, that brightness. And we just generally don't get that brightness further north, so they don't put out as much.
Well, I could have done better, I know, if I had angled it better according to the time of year. And that's one of the considerations with solar. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, it depends on where you are on the planet. The further north from the equator that you are, the lower the angle of the sun will be in the winter. And so what you have to do to get the most out of your solar panel is to have it tilted more towards the vertical. If the sun is lower in the sky, the panel has to be more vertical. So we live right here at 47 degrees north of the equator. So in the winter, we would want to almost tilt our panel to be 60 degrees off of the horizontal. And then the summer, the sun is up much higher. And so you could tilt the panels back, lay them flatter during the summertime to get more output.
Now, how do you do that if it's fixed on a roof?
Well, in most cases, you don't. You just install it at the same angle as the roof because you don't want to build all kinds of contraptions on top of people's roofs. It makes the neighborhood more ugly. So essentially, you install them on the same plane of the roof. And during the summer, because most of the roofs are flatter, you know, they're 20 degrees, 25 degrees. And so in the summer, you get a lot of output. In the winter, you don't get as much output. They do make devices that tilt and you can rotate. You can either adjust them manually by season if you want, or you can put them on a pole where they're easy to adjust and tilt for summer and winter angles.
Right. I know an off-grid friend who's in Ontario, Canada, and he has his on a kind of pole. And I think he told me he has an automatic tracking system that adjusts them. He doesn't have to go out and do them himself. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you can have, especially on top of a pole, it's pretty easy to do. And they have, there's a lot of companies that make what they call a tracker, which follows the sun as it comes up over the eastern horizon and tracks the sun throughout the day. So the panels are facing directly wherever the sun is throughout the day. So as the sun is going down in the evening to the west, the panels are then tilted towards the west to face the sun. And then at night, they rotate back to the east and wait for the sun to come back up. So all day long, they're following the sun.
Do you gain enough juice by doing that to, it must take a little bit of electricity just to move the panel around.
It does. It takes a little bit, but nah, you get much more output than that energy needed to move them. And so you can actually increase your output of your solar panels by 20 or 30% by tracking the sun during the day.
Well, as we wrap up, how do people get in touch with you or your company? How do they find out more?
Well, the best way, if you want to work on solar projects here in Western Washington, just give us a call, Sun's Eye Solar, or you can look at our website at sunseyesolar.com.
Thank you very much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to be here.
That was just a sample from my full 18-minute interview with Brad. We talk about roof angles, solar water heating, and more. Get the full interview as a free MP3 download from my Radio EcoShock show blog at ecoshock.info or from our website at ecoshock.org. Look under Alternative Energy. At the Mother Earth News, the whole mobile studio was powered by the sun. Join me, won't you, in the clean energy revolution as much as we can. You can help support this program at our website, ecoshock.org. My many thanks to listeners who made it possible to record so many great guests at the fair. I'm Alex Smith, saying there's a lot more Radio EcoShock coming next week. Let's meet again then. We'll head out with music by Vast Mandana out of Oakland, California.